And what's interesting about this crisis is it's really revealed so many problems that we have in our current way of doing capitalism. There's different ways to do capitalism. Davos this year, I know all the talk was about purpose and stakeholder capitalism. And I think this is the moment to say, okay, if we're serious about that, let's make sure that we bring that lens of stakeholder capitalism, of collective value creation to the table and how we structure the details of things like the bailouts. And I just want to pause on the bailouts because that's really quite striking how quickly so many companies, which often, you know, pretend that they want the state to stay away in bad times, they then ask for the state to come in. And of course, the state should come in and help companies of all sizes. But how to really make sure that we bring conditionality, not in a punitive way, but in a way that really also lays the path for the kind of economy that we want to have in the next 10 years, both because we need to have a recovery now, but even without the COVID crisis, so more inclusive and more sustainable economy, there's really interesting lessons, I think, coming from around the world. And I think in the US, Elizabeth Warren has been very clear on the kind of conditions she thinks should be in place, both in terms of, for example, the airline industries receiving the bailouts that they're asking for, only if they promise to reduce their carbon emissions. There's all sorts of different ways that you could also make sure that the companies that are receiving a part of their wage bill paid for is conditional also on not laying off the workers. It's quite striking how in the US, in the UK, for example, that hasn't actually been done. So something like 80% of the wage bill will be paid, but there aren't strong conditions in place to even make sure that the layoffs won't happen. So it's kind of potentially counterproductive. But also, you know, the level of financialization of our economy, and this includes, by the way, lots of the health companies, the pharmaceutical companies that we are also asking to collaborate with state entities to help us get a vaccine. We know that the corporate governance model of these companies has been highly problematic, with in some cases like Pfizer, a very high percentage of the net income being earned, being distributed through dividends and share buybacks. So again, that is becoming an issue itself, not just with the companies, also with banks, to be making sure that any saving of businesses is conditional on not using these share buybacks and dividend payouts in a moment that we really require this reinvestment.
Last week, Martin, Wolf, you were saying that you hadn't had a great opportunity to look at the measures being put in place, but the ones that you thought were getting it right, potentially with the UK and German responses. If you had a chance to look in more detail at those responses, and have you got any further reflections on who's putting in place measures that look to be robust and who needs to go further?
Well, I've looked still mostly at the G7. I think it's pretty clear, as far as I can see, that the worst that I've looked at of the major countries is the US. I think, as Mariana indicated, they all have, of these major countries, they all have problems. Partly because it's genuinely difficult to create completely new systems for dealing with a problem that no one anticipated overnight. So I give them a lot of credit for managing to do anything. But we know what we're trying to do in theory. We're trying to protect the incomes of the vulnerable as long as the closures continue. We want to maintain demand in line with the reduced supply. We want to shift resources into the health sector, and we want to maintain economic potential. So we don't want businesses to disappear completely with all their labor forces and so forth. Doing all that at the same time, while making sure that the money gets through to individuals who are the first thing, vulnerability, is really quite difficult. I'm very sympathetic to the idea of basic income in this situation. I'm very happy with policies that pay people for short time work, which is what the Germans have been doing, conditional, of course, on their continuing on the books. I think that's something Mariana has stressed, and I agree with that. We have a lot of questions about how we maintain economic potential. So since we don't want to bail out all the bad debts in the economy, the highly leveraged companies, which basically use this in order to gear up equity returns. At the same time, we don't want to get gigantic chains of bankruptcy running through the whole economy. It's going to be very, very complicated, and the situations in individual economies differ very much in the extent of leverage and where it is. So one can't easily compare them all.
So it seems, Martin and Mariana, that both of you sort of agreed that essentially we need big government right now. We need a government to step in to bail out, and of course, in to the benefit of people first and foremost, but in any case, a big government.
So this raises lots of questions. So first of all, in the basic, governments have decided for health policy reasons, which are going to become increasingly controversial, we can see this, to close down the economy. It's a conscious decision. So this is not a normal recession. It's a policy decision. I think it's almost certainly the correct policy decision. It's going to be very controversial as time passes. If a government does that, and of course a lot of it is happening because people are doing it too, they're just stopping, they're not going to buy anything or so forth, then government is the insurer of last resort for the economic system. That's what governments are for. They're the insurers of last resort, period. So they're what you call big government is an absolutely inevitable consequence of the situation we find ourselves in. There's nothing in the least surprising. This raises two big questions. The first is that a permanent shift in the nature of government, ongoing operation in the economy? And my guess will be it will vary. We'll see, but I think it will vary. The second big question, which you've raised, is what is sort of situation are you going to be in at the end of this? Well, there are some things that are perfectly obvious, as you said. There will be much larger debt, public debt. There will be very, very large fiscal deficits, and there will be long-term economic damage. There will be very interesting questions raised, not dissimilar to the questions raised after the financial crisis about what the response should be, and the debate over austerity, quote unquote, will quite certainly reemerge.
Thank you. Mariana, I know you wanted to come in on that.
Yeah, just I think it's very important not to confuse big government with smart government. I don't know if you've seen also the recent story about the ventilator procurement in the U.S. that went terribly wrong. It's interesting to compare that with how the military does its procurement. So when we really think something is urgent, like winning a war or going to the moon and back again, which required procurement to Honeywell, Motorola, and General Electric, somehow the state has been very smart in how it negotiates the deals, the contracts, the conditions, you know, telling the private sector, no, that doesn't work, please try again, not just accepting any, thing that it produces. And I think here it's very important to learn that we don't just need money to be pouring into the system. We need smart state institutions also to manage it. And I can tell you, because I've studied this quite a bit, I wrote a book about it, the outsourcing from government to the private sector in the last 30 years has also resulted in a fall in the capabilities and capacity within government institutions to do their job.
And probably the big difference between me and Mariana is that this is temperamental, I think, not intellectual, is that she believes in the capacity of the state to reform itself on a higher level than I do. I will be very, very happy if we get through this, which I think will be an enormous test, in something close to one piece with functioning societies and functioning economies at all. I'm that worried about where we are now heading. Right at the moment, we're at the emergency invention every week stage. Every policymaker is throwing money at the wall because it has to get there at once. And a lot of this is not very subtle. And it is very, very likely that they're going to be reinventing some of what they've done. It's going to be very, very messy. Depending on how long the stop phase is, or the stops, it could be 2 years. I mean, let's be clear, it could be 2 years that we're in, not like this, but we're in stops. Then it may be possible, indeed, the force may be very powerful, to really rethink how we do business. I mean, it's to do the sorts of things Mariana said, you need a long time. So the Second World War transformed the British economy in many ways, but it was effectively 6 years. The Moonsh project was much longer. If it's going to be 2 years, then you might well see people coming back and thinking very, very hard about the way the institutions of society should differ from what they are now. But right at the moment, my very strong impression is no policymaker is really thinking about this. So it's a time for the intellectuals to think about that. They're just trying to get us through week by week in what is, of course, staggering uncertainty about how long this will last, whether they can get hold of it and reopen economies. We're seeing this happening now in China. We don't know what the consequences will be. They will make an immense number of mistakes. It's absolutely clear, and they will have to try and correct them as they go along.